You know, listening to 1A can help you make good decisions. I mean, think about it. We get expert guests to explain complex issues. We ask the questions that you tell us you want asked. We get you the answers you wanted, and we answer the questions you might not have known you had. Now, here's something else to think about. Imagine this kind of high-quality conversation like infrastructure for life. This podcast kind of paves roads and bridges that take you to better conversations with friends and colleagues, better decisions that fit your beliefs at the ballot box, more delightful discoveries about the world around us. And it's solid. No potholes, no detours, none of that. This type of infrastructure is not cheap, but it's a worthy investment. So support your local NPR station right now at donate.npr.org/1A. Thanks. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. It'll take you the better part of an hour to drive from Madison, Wisconsin, north to the small city of Baraboo. It recently made headlines after a photo of high schoolers in front of the local courthouse gave what looked like a Nazi salute. And that picture went viral. Rebukes poured in from the Auschwitz Memorial, from comedian Sarah Silverman, and many others. Now, the school decided not to punish the students. School administrator Lori Mueller wrote, quote, "Because of the students' First Amendment rights, the district is not in a position to punish the students for their actions," unquote. What responsibilities do high schools have to punish hate speech from children? Do you suspend them? Do you expel them? When should students be old enough to know better? We discussed this with two guests who joined us from Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison. Jeff Spitzer Resnick is a civil rights lawyer who specializes in education law and school discipline matters at Systems Change Consulting. He's also the president of the Shari Shemayim Synagogue in Madison. Jeff wrote an open letter to the Baraboo School District after that photo made headlines. Some of his fellow congregants attend Baraboo High or have connections to the school. We also spoke to Peter Vedro, the Sauk County Board of Supervisors chairman. Baraboo is the Sauk County seat. Its supervisors are considering an anti-hate resolution in response to the photo. Now, we did invite the Baraboo School District Superintendent and the President of the School Board to join our discussion. They did not make themselves available due to prior commitments, but that invitation stands. I need to pull up the picture, but while I'm doing that, what kind of conversations, Peter, have you been hearing from locals about all this?
Well, I want everyone to know that, you know, we are all as a community united to address this issue. Nobody is ignoring it. Nobody is sweeping it under the rug. The Baraboo School District, along with the city of Baraboo, have organized a three-part gathering of community members called Baraboo Listens. That happened last week, 2 weeks ago, rather, Baraboo Talks, which happened last week, and a date scheduled in the middle of December for Baraboo Acts, where a variety of the feedback from citizens, students, and the administration, the city, will focus on what specific acts can be taken to move our community toward the sense of what we believe ourselves to be. Now, Baraboo is a small community, as you've indicated, north of Madison, but it has been recognized by Municipality Magazine as one of the top 10 small communities to visit. We have such community institutions like the Aldo Leopold Center, Circus World, the Crane Foundation, the Al Ringling Theater. We have moved in significant directions to invite members of our community and the larger community to come see us. And this incident is one which has besmirched our reputation, and we are taking it seriously. I do want to say, though, there is a significant difference between, quote, legal issues, as you've quoted Superintendent Dr. Miller in stating, mm-hmm. versus what I believe all of us in the community agree, is that we need to look at this from an ethical perspective and organize our response to the situation from an ethical standpoint.
Well, and that's kind of what I want to get into as our conversation goes on. And certainly some folks who are nearby in other parts of Wisconsin feel quite the same. Jeff, I wonder if we could talk about the photo itself. Some of them look like they could be waving, kind of bent elbow, fingers apart. Others, the elbow is very straight and the fingers are right together. They're all waving. Looks like they're almost all waving their right arms. There's one kid in the front row center in a black suit who's got his arm down by his side. Looks like he's making an okay symbol, kind of pointing at the ground. I don't get that. But their hands are doing a variety of different things. How do you interpret this picture?
Well, I think almost anybody who looks at that picture will see a Nazi salute by many of the kids, not all of them.
And we should note that this is a sea of white boys in this picture. There's no diversity
predominantly,
in this picture.
Right. Predominantly. I think there may be one African-American boy in there. You know, one of the aspects that has to be considered, and I think the reason why this has gathered so much attention, regardless of the intent, and, you know, Superintendent Miller's right. We can't know unless they tell us themselves exactly what each boy intended. I suspect some intended a Nazi salute. I suspect others were going along for the ride, and I suspect others had no idea what they were doing. That being said, as Claire, who sent you that tweet, said, the impact remains the same. You look at the picture, it looks like a lot of boys giving a Nazi salute. It looks like a 21st century version of brown-shirted Nazi youth, Hitler youth, giving a Nazi salute. We can't back away from what the image looks like regardless of the intention, and therefore we can't back away from the impact it has not only on survivors of the Holocaust and Jewish people, but let's not forget that the Nazis, while their primary target may have been Jews, we were not their only target. And in this day and age, a Nazi salute is emblematic of white nationalism, which has many targets that include people of color and gays and lesbians and Jewish people as well. So that's why the community has to grapple with it. That's why, you know, this hopefully will become not just a teaching lesson for the Baraboo community, but frankly for school districts nationwide. I've even been contacted by other school districts asking about, hey, we haven't had this problem, but what should we do to avoid it?
But Peter, what about this argument in terms of whether the kids knew what they were doing?
Well, I would agree that the intent we will never know. We deal with the consequences. And I believe that is what we need to organize around. I think social media has created the venue where individual responses to situations are immediate, and yet what the reality behind the original input needs time in order to unfold. I agree absolutely with the comments of my colleague. As a Jew myself, I'm very much concerned about the rise of anti-Semitism, but I am also very concerned about the nature of where, as a nation, we are moving, and I consider that retrograde.
Right. Let's hold right there. We have to pause for just a moment, but we'll pick this up in just a moment with Peter Vedrow of the Sauk County Board of Supervisors and civil rights attorney Jeff Spitzer Resnick.
This message comes from NPR sponsor ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
Planet Money tip number 17. A great analogy doesn't have to make sense.
Busier than a one-legged bobcat covering up his own crap on a frozen pond.
Did you just make that up?
Well, yeah.
Planet Money, a poetic podcast about the economy.
As I look at the census statistics on Baraboo, Wisconsin, it's a city of about 12,000 people, 93% white, 1% black, less than 1% American Indian, 1% Asian American, about 2% biracial, and about 5% Hispanic or Latino. About 91% of Baraboo is white non-Hispanic.
Yeah, I mean, it's a largely white community, and there are as you indicated, a number of people of color. There's a small number of Jewish families. There's a Jewish family that belonged to my synagogue, including children who go to the high school. And I know them personally, and they've been very involved in trying to kind of rectify this situation. I think in response to that last comment you got, it's one of the concerns that I had that although I think, as Peter mentioned before, the school district and the community is trying to move forward and actually taking some of the advice that I gave them in an open letter I wrote in my blog to the Baraboo School Board, throwing up the First Amendment as a shield initially, I think was a mistake. I think it was a mistake for a few reasons. One, if in fact it was just a wave, no wave needs to be protected by the First Amendment. So by throwing up the First Amendment, there's kind of this concession then that it was a Nazi salute. Second of all, in school districts, students don't have as much First Amendment right as we do, let's say, if you were just out in a public park. And that includes, some have said, hey, this wasn't on school grounds. It doesn't matter. It was a school-related activity. So the example I made in another follow-up blog I wrote about what I called First Amendment hypocrisy is not necessarily in Baraboo, but elsewhere, we actually see not only explicit policies, but actual punishment, usually of kids of color who flash gang signs. And, you know, are we making different decisions depending on who is making what sign? And this gets to the white nationalism problem we were discussing earlier.
Right.
But last but not least, the question is, where do you start? We can have all kinds of legal arguments about whether or not the First Amendment protects us. My position is, why have that argument? Why aren't we moving first to the things that actually the school district is trying to do now but gets buried underneath this First Amendment question around restorative justice, teaching appropriate cultural history, including about the Holocaust, but not just about the Holocaust, teaching about white nationalism.
Right.
Another area that I recommended, and I haven't seen yet come out, is we need to teach our kids to be critical thinkers. As we've been talking a lot about social media. It is too easy to not really think critically about what is and isn't happening and what a teenager in particular should do or not do in a particular circumstance. I do want to be clear.
Yeah.
Even though I am suggesting that the First Amendment should not have been thrown up as a shield, I want to be clear. I don't think these students should have been disciplined. There are two different things. It's a question of how you approach it. I believe approaching it through education, punishment. What's punishment going to do to these kids? We're going to suspend them for a day? Have they learned a lesson? I sincerely doubt it. But at the same time, you don't want to send a message to the entire community that in a Nazi salute and a public school activity is protected by the First Amendment. Those are two different questions.
Well, that's kind of what I'm wondering. And Peter, I wanted to get to you on that. Let me get to one last comment regarding that inconsistency. And then, Peter, I'd love to hear from you. Dr. Wei emailed, your discussion of the Wisconsin high schoolers not being disciplined for snapping the Nazi salute hit a nerve with me. It reminds me of 2013, when that Native girl in Alabama got fined $1,000 and had her diploma withheld because of her horrible crime. She put an eagle feather in her graduation cap tassel. Please feel free to join me in commenting on the blatant hypocrisy involved. Peter?
I would agree with all of the comments that have been made. You know, our Declaration of Independence clearly states that it is our objective to move toward a more perfect union. We are not a perfect union. We have never been a perfect union, but we, with the correct leadership and the long arc of justice, continue to move slowly but surely in that direction. And these inconsistencies that have been brought forward are a part of the human character. It is our responsibility to point them out, acknowledge them, and to move further toward being more perfect in what we do.
But why not punish these kids? What's the harm? I mean, we fought a war over the Nazis. There is no American who believes that there is a place for Nazi ideology in this democracy. Isn't there a way to both educate them and smack them so they don't do it again?
I would agree. I don't think that the Baraboo School District, although I cannot speak in their behalf, although I did serve for 6 years as a Baraboo School Board member, I have two students, one in middle school and the other in high school at Baraboo. I'm very active in the community. I do want all of us to understand a larger frame that is missing here. A week before this picture surfaced, the Baraboo School District, under the guidance of Steve Argo, one of the history teachers, has been working for several years to create a memorial for the young Baraboo men who were saved during World War I and the sinking of the Tuskegee ship. Just a week before, the community gathered to honor a historical moment in Baraboo's history. So we have the extremes here. You know, that is what Baraboo High School is, and that is what the Baraboo community is. A week later, this photo surfaces, and yes, we have to acknowledge that that is what is happening at Baraboo High School and in the Baraboo community as well. Once we acknowledge that, we can move forward. And I do believe that we are moving forward. These young men, and I would ask anyone to try to remember what their life was when they were a teenager and the various kinds of foolish, I hardly use this word, but I will use it now, stupid things that young people do. If we are to judge these young people by their actions, we can only do that if we step back and look at our own experiences as well. I am not saying that there is not consequence. Mm. Obviously, there are consequences.
Right. Right.
But these young men also, given social media and given what is accessible, have triggered individual responses from people that are beyond the pale. It is important to put this in context.
Well, I should note, by the way, that the Baraboo School District has released a series of its plans to respond to this, and those do include trainings on social justice and restorative justice. Peter Vedro, talk about the conversation now in terms of what happens from here, particularly with restorative justice. Is there anything concrete that you see folks in Baraboo kind of coalescing around?
Well, that will be forthcoming in the next meeting, which I believe is scheduled for December 18th, when we will come together again as a community of more than 200 people who have participated so far in the Baraboo Talks, Baraboo Listens, and now Baraboo Acts to gather the information. As you indicated, a press release from Dr. Miller is on the Baraboo website Baraboo High School website that indicates what some of the actions are that will be discussed in Baraboo Acts and to put these into implementation. I just do want to comment that this, you know, obviously has sparked a concern not only amongst Jewish people because of that trigger, but as my colleague says, this is a much larger issue that we have to face as a nation. One can turn in almost any direction and find areas where there are inconsistencies, discrimination continues. You know, all one has to do is look at what's going on in the Wisconsin legislature today to understand that power is being used for self-interests and without regard to basic fundamental civility and representative democracy. As a teacher of 20 years in high school, as a parent, as a Baraboo School Board member, my focus has always been on trying to teach discernment. And as Jeff has indicated, that is one of the most critical features now in social media.
Right. I know we're very low on time, but I do kind of wonder, Jeff, and I'll finish with you. I wonder if or how ready you feel that Baraboo is to have this conversation. We've heard from folks, including our producer, the producer of this hour, who is an alumna of Baraboo High School. She's a woman of color and has related to us what she experienced in terms of hearing the N-word, hearing racial slurs by students in class and in the halls, a row of student trucks with Confederate flags parked in the parking lot. Like this This is not new. Before we have to go, Jeff, how ready do you think Baraboo is for this kind of introspection?
I think it's a mixed bag. On one hand, as Peter pointed out, they are putting together community meetings. I was at the first meeting. My rabbi spoke and was the only person to get a standing ovation from about 500 people who were there. That was fantastic. At the same time, Dr. Miller, when she spoke, got very defensive about social media and almost appeared to be defending these boys, which again, I think was a mistake. She did not get a standing ovation. That being said, they've come out with some very good policies, some of which I've suggested. The question is, how well are they going to be implemented? There was a recent story in the Baraboo newspaper that I think got picked up elsewhere about a guardian who reported her two middle school kids had very different experiences in the classroom. Mm-hmm. One teacher said, hey, we don't need to talk about this picture. It was a joke. Another teacher who actually gave some very important lessons about why this picture was a problem.
Okay.
So the district is going to have to also train its staff. If it wants to educate its kids, it needs to make sure its staff is on board with the appropriate education about
Jeff
the problems.
Jeff Spitzer-Resnick from Systems Change Consulting and Congregation Shari Shema Mayim and Peter Vedro of the Sauk County Board of Supervisors. Thanks for speaking to us. We'll take this conversation nationwide in a moment. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Gelmar CLR. Whatever you call your home, Gelmar knows you take great pride in keeping it clean. That's where CLR comes in. CLR dissolves calcium, lime, and rust all around the house using natural ingredients, not harsh chemicals. It even carries the EPA's Safer Choice seal. Keep your little piece of the planet looking its best with CLR, making the world a little cleaner.
Hey, just a quick reminder, your support is what keeps 1A and NPR on the air. We provide that rare space that promotes open dialogue, where everyone feels welcome and everyone feels heard. We are in no one's pocket but the pocket of those who keep us going. That's you. So please, make a donation at donate.npr.org/1A. Thanks. Now let's zoom out a bit more and see how this is playing out across the country. Joining us from Texas Public Radio in San Antonio is Francisco Vara Horta, a national reporter and data specialist at Chalkbeat, an educational news site. Francisco, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And joining us from Denver is Alan Smith, the chief of culture, equity, and leader of the culture, equity, and leadership team at Denver Public Schools. Alan, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Francisco, let me start with you. You've been reporting on acts of hate in K-12 schools nationally, including a collaboration between Education Week and ProPublica to try and track these incidents. What do we know now about the scope of these incidents in schools? Do they collect in certain areas? Are they going up? Are they going down? What's it look like?
Well, the greatest challenge right on the onset is that there isn't uniform data across the country to be able to look at, to see exactly the nature of the incidents, who's being specifically targeted. But ProPublica and Education Week and about 100 other news organizations worked in the last few years to try to collect more reports. And when we were able to look at the data, we could confirm almost nearly 500 incidents just from 2015 to 2017. There was obviously more reporting around the presidential election that we recently had because of some of the rhetoric. And so it's hard to know from a long-term perspective how many there are, but the nature of the reports themselves are pretty disturbing from what, we know throughout our history and some of the phrases used that were resurged in the last wave of this political rhetoric.
What kinds of incidents are we talking about? What happened?
So it's hard to say exactly the finite, what the trends are across the board definitively because the data it's reliant on who's reporting it. And in a lot of places, people are maybe intimidated to do so. But in places that we do see it, it tends to target Black students, Jewish students, students in color in general, but particularly in the last few years, Latino students and Muslim students, going back to sometimes tying it to 9/11, and then would build the wall towards Latino students, even those that are non-Mexican.
One more thing for you, Francisco. You said the data are inconsistent. Why is that?
Well, because the federal law requires the U.S. Department of Justice to report hate crime statistics, but local and state police departments aren't required to do so. So many don't. Some, about five states don't even have hate crime laws on the books. And so school districts aren't really required to have to turn over any of that information to the federal government. So it's really hard to get a sense of what's happening. And even the definition of what constitutes a hate crime or a bias incident, because a lot of these incidents are graffiti or it's something shouted in a hallway. So that doesn't really rise to the level of a crime. So it's hard to know exactly how many there are, but they are definitely happening, as you can see what transpired recently in Wisconsin and across the country if you just do a Google search now.
Well, graffiti is a crime, though, isn't it? Are you saying that some districts don't consider graffiti a heinous enough act to report?
And it's hard to figure out who did it necessarily, because a lot of it will just show up at night. It can be reported, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they find anyone liable for it. So it goes as far as that. But of course, usually those incidents have triggered conversations and the creation of like diversity councils in some of these places. So that's one way of trying to document it or hold people accountable.
Definitely want to hear from you, Alan Smith, in terms of the work that you're doing addressing hate incidents at Denver Public Schools. You lead a team that's geared toward addressing issues of campus climate and of equity. What kinds of things are you doing in Denver?
Well, thank you. First, you know, what we had to do at a school district the size of Denver is we had to acknowledge the fact that we have institutionalized racism in the district. And that is a bold move for our urban school district. And our board, president and superintendent and I, came out and said, listen, we realize that there are some things in our school district that are impacting all of our students from achieving to their very best capabilities. And we as a school district must address it. And so my team then puts on a lot of values-based programs that deal with equity, that deal with bias, that deal with solutions to having more culturally responsive education. And then more than educating just the teachers and the students, we also want to talk about the harm that is caused from some of the actions that these individuals have done and how to repair those in a way that is not just on the surface, but is truly going to allow people to show up as their best selves.
I wonder how Denver might have responded if this incident in Baraboo, Wisconsin had happened there. I'm sure there are people in the community who would have wanted to kind of talk to these boys, find out where their heads are at, maybe try something a little more restorative, kind of making a teaching moment. And I'm sure there are also people in the community who would have been like, I don't give a damn why they did it. Let's just pop these little zits and teach them a lesson. How do you walk that line in Denver?
I think the point of this should not be punitive. And I agree with what I heard on the last segment. You could suspend these students and those students still not understand the consequences of their actions. But you have to take them through an entire process. And one of the pieces that I really want to focus on is they're talking about these students and what they did and it being a stupid action, but they're not talking at all about those people who have been harmed and affected by this. Where is the emphasis on those people that are dealing with it right now? And have to show up in that high school, in that community, and how they are expected to go on with their day-to-day life as they know it. But yet no one seems to be, or at least it did not seem to me to be, that they were dealing with how they were impacted. And so we would want to bring those students forward. We would want to have conversations. Yes, some of it be restorative, but we'd also want to get to the root of it, because this, to me, is a symptom from a larger issue. And so how do we get at the root of this? And where is this coming from? Is it in our classrooms? Is this something that's a larger part of our community that we need to deal with and have conversation?
With regards to getting to the root of it, artist Adri tweeted, "The real challenge for educators, especially at the elementary level, is tackling the ability to discern. Discernment is challenging enough in itself for adults in the social media age, but seeds can be planted early, separate from religious ideals that will aid children." Francisco Vara Horta, could you respond to artist Adri? What are you seeing in terms of the way that districts are dealing with this issue of teaching kids how to discern what's what?
That's a great thought there, because teachers have expressed concern to me that they feared taking a stand on some of these issues would look like it's taking a political perspective. And so districts are hard-pressed to figure out proactively what to do in these situations. In a lot of cases, school districts tend to be more reactive. In my experience, they were sending more carefully worded statements over to us when we would ask questions. I think the work in Denver that you're hearing about is taking a more proactive approach toward that, looking more at curriculum. I think also teachers and students are really grappling with the role of social media in this equation, because in previous years, when I talked to teachers who had more experience, it said, you know, there'd be an incident and it would be said once and maybe that group would hear it. But now it's an image that can go viral on Instagram or Snapchat, and it can really make a lot of students not feel safe. So it's important for school districts to understand that this is also a bit of a safety issue for students, because they don't know if they'll be targeted or it's the first step towards something that could become more violent.
Alan, could you respond to that? As I understand it, your district is 75% students of color, 25% white. I wonder how restorative justice would factor in Denver for an issue like this, and particularly whether or not certain kinds of students are more likely to be offered restorative justice rather than just pure punishment.
Thing in Denver, it is a practice that we use restorative justice with all of our students. And being in a district that is the majority students of color, we tend to see more students of color having these opportunities to talk about the harm that they caused, how to repair it, and then what they're going to do to move forward as a positive or contributing member of the school or our classroom. I think the restorative justice piece that is missing in this conversation as it relates to this specific incident is you have to bring the other people that are harmed to the table. And how exactly are we hearing from them? Because restorative justice may not be for the white students that did this act, you know, to talk about the harm that they caused, but it could be for them to listen to those students, and the restorative justice may be for them, the victims, the ones that have to deal with it. And I think understanding where you start at and where you finish is going to say a lot about what your beliefs are around who's right and who's wrong in this situation.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Alan, with regards to restorative justice, what's the goal in terms of when those students walk out of that room? I mean, is the goal to have everybody feel better about the situation, to have these students come out as friends? Is it okay if the aggrieved student looks at the perpetrator and says, "You suck, and what you did sucked, and I'm going to hate you forever, and I just need you to know that so I can walk out of here with my head held high"? Like, what's the goal? Is it okay for the aggrieved student to be like, "You suck, I hate you, I don't want to talk to you, and I just needed you to know that you suck"?
No, that wouldn't be restorative justice. but we do.
But here's what I'm wondering about that. Uh-huh. Why not? I mean, if these young men in a workplace threw up that salute at an office party, fired, no restorative justice. If I had thrown up a gang sign in a picture that ended up on NPR's Twitter feed, fired, no career for me. At what point do you start to set a precedent to these boys that you cannot do this and be a part of society?
Yeah, I do think you set that precedent at the very outset, and that comes by the expectations that you have set from your board, your principals, your policies, you know, to everything in your school and your classroom. You have to set that tone, and you have to talk about what is to be expected. It is okay for a person to say how they feel, that this sucks, they hate this, and this really hurt them. But the point is to be able to get past that, because we still have to move on. And the more that people carry on this kind of hatred and, you know, visceral reactions to certain situations like this, it hurts them and doesn't allow them to move forward. What we want our students to be able to do is talk about the harm that they caused and then how to repair it. You may not like each other, but at least you can coexist with each other and allow each other the space to be their best selves.
Alan Smith, the chief of the Denver Public Schools Culture, Equity, and Leadership Team. Alan, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
And Francisco Vara Horta, national reporter and data specialist at Chalkbeat. Thanks, Francisco.
Thank you.
Today's conversation was produced by Baraboo High School alumna Bianca Martin, doing her school proud. To learn more about her and the rest of the staff, visit the1a.org/staff. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.